Good evening. My name is Pamela. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Pamela.
And it is really an amazing honor to be here with all of you tonight and to... It's an honor to be here with all of you tonight and to be here in Las Vegas at our 20th global convention. It's amazing that that is our 20th global convention. Thank you, Janice, for inviting me to share tonight with all of you. I used to, when I came into program and I heard people say, I'm a grateful compulsive eater, I just rolled my eyes. And I used to roll my eyes about a lot of things in those early days, and I'm surprised they're not still rolling around in my head. But now I do say I am a compulsive eater, grateful to be in recovery. And that's the deal. You know, I know that being a compulsive eater is what brought me into recovery. I also know that there are a lot of compulsive eaters who are not in recovery. So I'm really grateful that I am a compulsive eater in recovery, because I found a wonderful life of joy in these rooms. I grew up in a small town in South Dakota. I have had three older brothers, so I was the youngest of four and the only girl, and that was pretty sweet. I always say that not all of us had an unhappy childhood. I know I hear a lot of stories in our rooms about unhappy childhoods. I did not have an unhappy childhood. Many of us didn't. But what I did have that I think many of us had is a very long childhood. My childhood lasted into my 40s, basically. When I came into these rooms, I came in here to grow up. So, which has been an amazing journey. And it wasn't like I woke up one day and said, wow, life is fabulous. I'm so happy. Everything is just perfect. I know. I think I'll go to CEA Howe. That wasn't what happened at all. My happy childhood, I had no food issues. Nobody in my family had food issues. That was not a problem. When I was 20, I was going to a Catholic girls' college in South Dakota. One of the most religious of the religious, and when I wasn't being religious, I was out drinking, and I was very sincere in both endeavors. So I was going to this Catholic girls' college. My parents decided to move to California because my older brothers had all moved to California. And I did not want to come to Los Angeles, Sodom and Gomorrah, not for me, no sir. I'm staying in South Dakota. And I had gone through all of the interviews to go into the convent with the Mother Superior and the Mother of Postulants and the Mother of Novitiates. And so I was going to go into the convent. And my mom said, well, you know, Dad will never go to Los Angeles if you don't come too. And I said, okay, I'll drive out there with you, but I'm coming right back. I mean, who wouldn't? Convent, South Dakota. So so I came out here to Los Angeles. I was almost 21. It was the 60s. So here I am, Los Angeles in the 60s, Sunset Strip, convent in South Dakota. I'm 21. What am I going to do? You know, tough decision. I didn't go back for 16 years. And but that was the first time I gained weight. And it was before coming to California. And I think that was simply emotional eating, just sort of leaving my little cocoon in Sodak. And coming to Los Angeles. And I gained, I don't know, maybe 10 to 15 pounds, which was just a horrific number for me at the time, because I had never had any weight issues. So I came to California. I lost the weight just normally and naturally, easily. And then several years later, maybe about 7 years later, I gained 20 pounds, and that was serious biz. I still wasn't alarmed. I had no idea this would become the raging disease that it became. So I went to a commercial weight loss program, and because I'm compulsive about food, I compulsively followed their plan, and I lost the weight easily. Kept that weight off a number of years, and then I gained 40 pounds. Still not alarmed, still not realizing how horrible this would be. And just thinking, oh, what's going on here? And so I went back to the commercial weight loss program, lost the weight, kept it off a number of years, and then I gained 60 pounds. So I went to a different commercial weight loss program and lost the weight. I always liked healthy food. This was the thing. I always liked healthy food. So when I went to these commercial weight loss programs, I didn't buy their food. I always just cooked the healthy stuff. And lost the 60 pounds, kept it off a number of years. And then I gained 80 pounds. Now I'm becoming alarmed. You know, this is not normal stuff. And 80 pounds. And so I went to a therapist who specialized in addictions because I realized at this point in time this was not normal, that I had willpower, obviously, because I lost the weight all the time and could keep it off a number of years. But the thing was, I never knew what the trigger was that would cause me to start eating and gain the weight. And then once my weight was up and I was miserable and unhappy, I never knew what the trigger was that would allow me to go on another diet and lose the weight. I never knew. And I remember saying, in fact, that in the 40, 60, 80 pound days, that when I lost the weight, okay, as soon as I gain 5 pounds, somehow knowing I would, I will lose those 5 pounds because it's easy to lose 5 pounds and I'm not going to go back up to some huge high weight. And the next thing I knew, I'd be up 40 pounds or 60 pounds or 80 pounds. There was no 5 pounds about it. You know, that was just, I was just off and running. So I went to a therapist who specialized in addiction. And I thought that we would talk about my childhood, talk about me endlessly, which would be fabulous. And we would unlock some little incident in my childhood that I didn't remember, and that would solve all of my eating problems and it would all be over. And my therapist, quack that she was, told me about this program where you go to 3 meetings a week and you make 4 phone calls a day and you weigh and measure your food and eat three meals a day and nothing in between. Now, that was not what I wanted to hear at all. So it took me a year of continuing to gain weight at 100 pounds over weight, I came into these rooms, and finally, and I knew nothing about. I had no 12-step experience at that point in time. This was just going to be another thing that would solve my problem. I still thought something would solve all these problems, and problems being food being the only problem, of course, and because otherwise I could manage my life perfectly fine. Thank you very much. So I finally, it was hard to find how in those days. It really was hard. And I finally got a list. Ray ran the only intergroup office at that time, the only how office. It was an intergroup office. And you had to pay 50 cents to get a phone list and send a stamp self-addressed envelope. And she was a good money manager. And so I finally got a phone list to the meetings. And I went to a meeting at the local YMCA near my house. And I got to the Y, and I'm looking in the rooms, and I don't see anything that looks like any kind of a meeting. So I had to go to the front desk, and I was absolutely humiliated going to the front desk and asking if they had, in those days we were OA How, if they had an Overeaters How meeting. Like the guy wouldn't know that I was a little overweight. You know, I was just and at 100 pounds. And he said, that meeting hasn't been here in a long time. Oh, no. So I go home, and I knew my neighbor was in Howe, and we weren't close, but I knew she was in Howe. So I went home, cracked open the wine, got out the snacks, and called my neighbor and said, I just went to this meeting. It wasn't there. And she said, oh, yeah, let me see if I can think of another Wednesday night meeting around here. And I'm thinking, no, not now. You know, now I'm well into the food and the wine. And she said, I know a great meeting on Sunday morning. I'll take you to that meeting on Sunday morning. So she took me to the Sunday morning Cole Street meeting, which I still attend 23 years later, the Cole Street meeting, although it's moved. I still think of it as the Cole Street meeting. And I walked in and everybody's sitting in a circle in this big gym, and somebody walked up to me and handed me something to read, and I said, I can't read, I'm just here. And she said, that's okay, you can read it. And it was the steps, which of course meant nothing to me at the time. But the thing I remember, sitting there in that circle, I'm sitting in my chair and I'm reading this, and I was so paralyzed by self-consciousness and fear just reading this that I thought I was going to faint and just like tumble into the middle of the circle, you know. And I remember reading that. And feeling like that. And the other thing I remember from that first meeting is that the leader wore cowboy boots. And I vowed that when I lost my weight, I was going to buy some cowboy boots because they looked really cool. I didn't tell you some of my diets. My favorite diet before I came to Howe was the gin and peanuts diet. That was my favorite diet. And it worked. Drank gin rocks, and peanuts in the shell. It takes a little extra effort. You can't eat them quite as fast. And that's all I ate, and I lost 20 pounds, and I don't know, really, really quickly. That was like my favorite diet. I know I got to Howe, but I want to go back to a few events before I got to Howe. Another, just before I came into Howe, I came into Howe in April 1994, and Easter was a few weeks before that. We always did big extended family holiday dinners, and we were going to my brother and sister-in-law's for Easter. And I love my in-laws. I love these celebrations. And my husband was out of town. He was going to be out of town for Easter. And so I thought, oh boy. So I called my sister-in-law and I said, I'm going down to the desert because a friend of mine from Washington is down there, and so I can't come to Easter dinner. I'm going down to Palm Springs. My plan was, my friend was in Palm Springs, but I wasn't going there. My plan was I was going to load up on food and booze and books and stay home the whole weekend and eat and drink and read. And that's exactly what I did, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I ate, I drank, I threw up, I ate, drank, threw up, ate, drank, threw up. I would read with one eye closed. And that was my idea of a really great weekend, a really great holiday. And that was 3 weeks before I came into Howe. I think when I was going to the therapist, I took a UCLA extension course on how to stop binging. And some of us after the course decided we would continue to meet. We met at somebody's house, and she had a big platter of crudité on the coffee table, and we were all sitting around the coffee table. I sat on the floor right next to the coffee table, and I just constantly ate the crudité, just sat there and constantly, and somebody commented, here I am in a group of people who are trying to stop eating, and I could not stop myself. And somebody commented on it, you know, you haven't stopped eating since you sat down. And I don't think I was even embarrassed. So I did lots of eating things. So I came to Howe, and I was so fortunate that my neighbor, after the meeting, just grabbed me by the arm, hauled me over to somebody, and asked that person if they would be my sponsor. I am so grateful for that, and I hope we all remember that. I try to remember that sometimes. I should remember it more, of course, but that had she not done that, I would have been out of there so fast. Not because I didn't think this would work, simply because I didn't even know how to ask somebody if they would sponsor me. I didn't know how to ask somebody if they would spend time with me and help me. I would have just walked away. And who knows if I ever would have come back. I don't know. So I'm eternally grateful to that neighbor. When I celebrated 15 years, I came back from that Sunday morning meeting, and my neighbor was out working in her yard. And as I said, we're not that close, you know, it's sort of like, hi. So I went over to her and I said, you know, I just came back from my Howe meeting celebrating 15 years, and I'm just so grateful to you for taking me to that first meeting and getting me a sponsor. And she said, did I? You know, she had no recollection of that, and that huge, momentous, wonderful, life-changing moment for me. So again, we don't know. So I came to Howe, got a sponsor. My sponsor, I've been so fortunate in sponsors. No people pleasers. No, they sponsor the program the way it's written. And my sponsor went through everything with me. I bought the literature. She said, you know, read the food plan. We read it together, actually. Buy everything you need to buy. Call me in the morning. And the best thing about this is that it was a Sunday morning, so I had all day Sunday to eat my brains out. And I availed myself of every moment of that. The only problem with it was it didn't last long enough. So I just ate and ate and ate and ate. Sunday or Monday morning, I was ready to go. And initially, one of the reasons how it worked for me was because there's so darn much to do. You know, I remember all the other diets I did. I love to cook, and I had shelves of cookbooks, and I subscribed to all these cooking magazines. And when I was on these diets, I would spend the whole time just looking through the magazines, looking at the pictures, reading the recipes, looking at the cookbooks, reading the recipes. And how I didn't have time to do that. I'm making all those damn calls and doing all that writing and going to all those meetings. And also, I remember saying, three meetings a week, that's ridiculous. I'll do it. But I also thought the food plan was ridiculous, of course. And I said, okay, I'll go to three meetings a week during the week, but the weekends are mine. And now I go to four meetings, three of which are on the weekend. And I've been doing that for years and years and years and years. So who knows what's in store for me. So basically, you know, recovery is really, really easy. All I had to do was change everything about myself. And that's really what recovery has been. It's just, it's all change, changing my perception, changing my perspective, changing my actions, changing my thoughts. Because if I don't change that person who brought me into these rooms, that person's going to take me out. So I needed to make these changes. And it's sort of like a cracked bowl. You know, you could put all kinds of good things in that cracked bowl forever, but until you fix the cracks, you're never going to fill the bowl. So I needed to fix the cracks. And it's kind of this dilemma that I hate change, but I want things to get better, but I don't want to do anything different. And because I believe HOW is such a gentle program and such a, you know, a program of guidance, it has worked for me amazingly well. My parents were very loving parents, but very passive parents. So I didn't grow up with a lot of rules. I didn't rebel, had nobody to rebel against. And so I really appreciated the structure. I needed the structure, and I love the structure. And what I find from the structure is freedom, just the most amazing freedom from the structure, freedom in weighing and measuring. Even now, sometimes I'll be preparing a meal at home, and I'll say, I'm not going to weigh my vegetables. And as I'm saying that, I have the scale down, and I'm putting the vegetables on the plate. It's just so automatic now, and I'm so grateful for that I had that training in my early years. It's saved me any number of times when my mind wants to do all these other things. And change requires action, action from me. You know, I can go to a meeting and I can hear somebody say great things and I can nod my head and I can laugh in acknowledgement. Yeah, that's the same. And feel the same way. But that's not going to change me. That's not going to change me. The only thing that's going to change me is action, that I need to take contrary action. I remember when I was doing the steps and I got to step 6 and 7, I thought, oh, hot dang, you know, two paragraphs in the big book and there's not much to do here, no inventory, don't have to give it away, I'm not yet at the dreaded steps 8 and 9, just zipping by 6 and 7. And little did I know that 6 and 7 are just, you know, just the substance, you know, my character defects and taking contrary action. I can humbly pray to have my shortcomings removed, but as a sponsor once said to me, God ain't going to come down and slap the fork out of my hand. I have to put it down. So 7 is about contrary action. I have to take contrary action. It's an ongoing thing for which I'm very grateful. I always kind of am amused when somebody says, I have a long way to go, and I'm thinking to where? You know, it's like Gertrude Sines says about Oakland, there's no there there. It's just a daily ongoing thing. And there's a line in literature, that in our recovery literature, that says, repetition is the only form of permanence that nature can achieve. And that's why I do the same thing day after day after day after week after month after year, because I have to do it every single day. I can't say, oh, I weighed and measured yesterday, I guess I don't have to do it today, everything's going to be fine. And you know, I have friends not in program who will say, you must know what 4 ounces looks like. You must know what a cup looks like. And the answer is, yeah, I do on a good day, but I never know if it's going to be a good day. I remember I had an experience early on in recovery. I was preparing dinner for my husband and me. I was grilling. This is not a meeting. I'm going to mention food. I was grilling steaks, and I put the steak on my plate, and I'm going, well, you know what? By the time you cut the meat away from the bone, it'll be about 4 ounces. Things falling off the plate practically, you know, and I'm going, it'll be about 4 ounces. And that made sense to me. And I sat down and I thought, maybe I'll just get up and cut out the center portion. That'll probably be 3 ounces, and then there'll be a little meat on the bone, and that'll be like 4 ounces. And so I cut out the center portion, it was 7 ounces. And so that was a really good lesson for me. You know, I just do not know. Somebody said to me recently, we were talking about abstinence, and she said, oh, I can only dream of having a lot of years of abstinence. And I just thought to myself, it's not about dreaming, you know. I can't dream about having the abstinence. I have to do the stuff. I was very big on dreaming, very big on dreaming. You know, I used to dream that I was tall and thin and beautiful, and I hid and ate and was fat. And I used to think that I had achieved some great thing and got all this recognition. I really loved the recognition. I got all this recognition for this great achievement. And I did nothing, and I hid, and I ate. And I used to dream that I was really gracious and compassionate. And I hid, and I ate, and I hated myself, so I was mean and awkward. And I used to dream that I had a house at the beach. I still dream that. That's okay. let's face facts. But it's not about dreaming. It's about action. It's about doing the action. And we talk a lot about willingness in our rooms. And willingness without action is fantasy. And I was big on fantasy. And it got me nowhere except to 237 pounds and very, very, very miserable. Recovery. My first year in program, I was diagnosed with cancer, and abstinence and CEA How got me through it. And 3 months later, my sister-in-law died from the same type of cancer, and abstinence and CEA How got me through it. And in that first year, my mother died. And my mother was a darling woman. And abstinence and CEA How got me through it. And in that first year, my husband, who had been diagnosed 4 years before that with a progressive degenerative neuromuscular disease, had to quit working because he could no longer walk steadily. So that was my first year in program. This is a man, you know, he was very athletic, golf, tennis, just this sparkling man, helicopter skiing in Canada. And he gradually went to a walker and then a wheelchair and then the bed. And I'm always grateful that the last 6 years of his life I was in recovery. No need to say it was an awkward, you know, how awkward we all are in our early years in recovery, but I know it was better than if I hadn't been in recovery. I know it was infinitely better for him and for me. We used to laugh all the time before we had any idea he would ever be sick. We used to laugh and say, it's a good thing I'm not a nurse because I'm so horrible. I'm just so horrible at caregiving and, you know, it's just get up, you're not sick. And so we used to laugh about that a lot. So then after he got sick, there was a lot of caregiving involved over those 10 years. And we really laughed then because I was sort of a nurse. And thank heavens he maintained his sense of humor. But so for those 10 years, so the last six of those 10 years, you know, hard years, abstinence and CEA how got me through it. And when Patrick died, I remember a sponsee saying, you know, I don't know what to do. Should we call you? And I said, yes, please. I need it. You know, I need the structure. I need the routine. I need you calling me. And see how an abstinence got me through it. And in recovery, I was fired three times. And usually we tell those stories, you know, before I got recovered, I got fired all the time. And I sort of have the opposite story. After I got into recovery, I was fired three times. And abstinence and recovery got me through it. And what they did also was allow me to see, oh, maybe I had a part in this whole thing. So I'm grateful for that. And 3 years ago, just before conference and convention, 3 years ago, I had a brother, my oldest brother died in 1990. 3 years ago, the second of my three brothers died. And I'd always defined myself as, you heard me define myself, the youngest of four, the only girl, three older brothers. And so my second brother died 3 years ago. And abstinence and CEA how got me through it. The big book says on page 15 that the big book is a design for living in rough going. And so it is, you know, so it is. And it's also a design for living in good times. This bracelet says joy because I love in the 12 and 12 that the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12th step, the joy of living, and it's all about joy. So now in recovery, how things have changed, I've learned to be more honest. I can't say honest because I'm not always honest. I don't need to make disclaimers. We all know that, you know, when we say we, like I practice these principles in all my affairs, we all know that I don't do it. Practice these principles in all my affairs. I do it as well as I can. So I've learned to be honest. And I've learned to look at my part in things. Recently, within the last couple months, I was talking with a friend after a meeting, and she has 37 years in another fellowship, and we were talking, and we're good friends, and I said something, and the moment I said it, I knew that I should not have said it. And I didn't intend it meanly, but it was a sensitive subject, and I shouldn't have said it. And there was like this frozen moment where we both thought, oh my God, what are we going to do now? And because we're both women in recovery, we knew what to do. We looked down and we talked about my pedicure. and then we really did. And then we said, bye, bye, see ya. And a half hour later, I called her, you know, and we talked about it, and we were able to talk about it. And I'm so grateful for that, because my way of dealing with these sort of things before recovery was to pretend it never happened, just to pretend it never happened. So it was so wonderful to be able to talk about it. And I have learned from the big book, which is basically a textbook. It's a textbook about how to live, how to deal with resentments. You know, page 552, the resentment prayer. And I was working with a sponsee recently who had a sort of a relationship issue. And so I said, well, why don't you do the resentment prayer for this person? You know, page 552, and she's... And I said, you don't have to mean it. And those are the magic words. Isn't that the greatest thing in that whole 552? You don't, even if you don't mean it, you say the resentment prayer. And she, and so she said she'd do it, but she was not happy about it. And so a couple days later, we were talking, and I said, did you add me to that resentment prayer? Because she was probably resenting the heck out of me for asking her to do it. But if she were, that would be great, you know, because it works. So the great thing was then a couple weeks later, she said, you know, I really had a softening of feeling about this person. It works. It really works. And all of these things work. And that was the thing for me. I never knew how to do these things. I never knew how, that's why I hid and I ate. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to act graciously. I didn't know how to be honest. And speaking of honesty, I always thought I was the most honest person in the history of the world when I walked into these rooms. I thought I was really honest. And then I realized that I was really honest about you, but I wasn't honest about me. And I started working on honesty. And I was sharing about it at a meeting, and after the meeting, one of my friends says, if you were any more honest, we couldn't stand you. But that was because I was being honest about you, not about me. And in working on honesty, all kinds of things came out that people pleasing is a form of dishonesty. You know, I would lie and say, sure, I'd love to do that, and then I'd call up and make an excuse. So in learning to be honest, a lot of other issues were dealt with. So here I am, you know, a lot of years later, and so very much happier. When I came in at 49, you know, on paper I had everything that I ever dreamed that I would want. You know, I had a wonderful husband. I had a job I loved. I got to travel all these places I dreamed of traveling. I had all these things. And now, 23 years later, I have none of those things. And yet, I'm a very contented, very happy person. And I'm not still here 23 years later because I do service. And I'm not still here because I weigh and measure. And I'm not still here because I go to 3 meetings a week. And I'm not still here because I talk the talk. I'm still here partly because I go to 3 meetings a week and because I do service and because I weigh and measure. But I'm here because I know I'm a compulsive eater. And I'm here because I found my own people. And that's us folk. So thank you. I'm happy to be here with you tonight.